With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
In a new suit.
You know it.
Coming up, we'll tell you how the NFL can avoid another Saints-Rams controversy.
And if LeBron James is still starting to put Magic Johnson on that hot seat, what happened? But we start every day with the Whitlocks. What you got today, big dog?
Rams defensive back Nickell Roby-Coleman is continuing one of the Super Bowl's great traditions. He's consulted with his agent or his boys from college and made the decision he's going to be Super Bowl 53's Joe Namath. Roby-Coleman is attempting to trash talk his way into Super Bowl history. He started the week taking aim at Tom Brady, suggesting that age had eroded the quarterback's performance. In the same Bleacher Report interview, Roby-Coleman expressed his disdain for the Patriots. He said, "I've got Buffalo blood running through my veins. So, you know, I hate these guys.
Off you.
I naturally hate them. I never liked New England." He called the Patriots arrogant. He said Belichick will run up the score in the fourth quarter. He said the Patriots love antagonizing their opponents. Stuff like that, little stuff to look down upon a team, little a-hole stuff like that. That's what makes you not like New England. Roby-Coleman calls himself the slot god. If he's not careful, when the Super Bowl is over, we'll be calling him the slot fraud. Coleman needs a history lesson on Super Bowl trash talk. Before there was a Joe Namath in Super Bowl III, there was a Fred the Hammer Williamson in Super Bowl I. Williamson played for the Kansas City Chiefs. Before playing the Packers, Williamson, a defensive back with a reputation for big hitting, ran his mouth about shutting down the Packers receivers. Medical personnel carried Williamson from the field on a stretcher, and the Chiefs lost the game. You want more history? Leading up to Super Bowl XIII, Cowboys linebacker Hollywood Henderson famously proclaimed that Terry Bradshaw couldn't spell cat if he spotted him the C and the A. Bradshaw tossed four touchdowns and was named the Super Bowl MVP. Henderson had no impact on the game. Thurman Thomas used Super Bowl XXVI to bitch about a lack of respect. He forgot his helmet and missed the game's first two plays. Philly receiver Freddie Mitchell called himself Fred X because he always delivered. He promised he had something for Patriots safety Rodney Harrison in Super Bowl 39. Harrison had two interceptions and a sack in New England's victory. Mitchell had one catch for 11 yards. Every year, someone volunteers to play the fool in the Super Bowl week. It's the equivalent of playing the lottery. You buy a ticket hoping you're the next Joe Namath. In this era of hyper-obsession with individual brand building, there's little downside for the individual. Roby-Coleman is building a nice little social media following this with his pregame trash talk, but it's not helping the Rams. That's why Aqib Talib, Brandon Cooks, and Wade Phillips have been so effusive in their praise of Tom Brady. That's why Roby-Coleman spent opening night at Super Bowl walking back his Brady comments.
I could never talk about somebody that's like the sensei of football. You can't talk about the sensei of football. Like, it's a respect level. And at this point, I feel like a little disrespected that people think that I would disrespect Tom Brady. I got nothing but respect.
All right, the damage has been done. Roby-Coleman has given the Patriots the emotional edge they've used as fuel for two decades. That edge doesn't guarantee a Patriot victory. It just makes the Rams' task harder. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Greg Jennings and Sean Merriman. Marcellus, I'll start with you. I think Roby-Coleman's comments will have an impact on this game. I think he's hurt the Rams.
Okay, I remember when I retired, someone told me to always respect the mundane, respect the little things, because not everyone's lived that experience. So, Jason, I'm going to respect where you're coming from right now, but dang, man. If you think that someone is walking into this game not already filled to the brim, to the max in motivation You think that words or something on a bulletin board or some fine print from Nickell Robey Coleman is going to do something to Tom Brady and others? You're highly mistaken. But let's just talk about that emotional advantage. I think it's with the Rams. I think the emotional advantage is with the Rams because even in the big moments, they're sticking true to their spirit and to their guns. If this is who you are, the slot god, you know what? When you're going against the GOAT, don't change who you are. And I like the fact that he is talking the same talk that has gotten them this far. But I just can't even fathom that this is going to do anything in New England's locker room in terms of motivation.
There's no better team at taking this motivation than the New England Patriots. They are the king at finding bulletin board material before games and putting it up there and finding a way to find that motivation to go out and win another football game. They somehow has been able this whole season to become the underdogs. How do you have that many Super Bowl and look at yourself as an underdog? They have taken the little bits and pieces of the media and what other players have said about them and put it up on the bulletin board and go out and win more football games. Now, the part I don't like is who it's coming from. If Aaron Donald said this, I'd be sitting back saying, yeah, dog, you good. You know, whatever. Slot guy. I mean, he's a good player. Don't get me wrong, but he's not somebody that plays all downs. He's not somebody that's going to travel with somebody's best wide receiver all the time. So if another guy had said this, I might have actually been okay with it. But you're not the one to say it.
Why is that?
Because you don't want to put
– It's who you are, though.
Yeah, that's who you are.
Yeah.
Right? That's who you are because you don't have to go and travel with another team's best wide receiver.
Fred X.
You get what I'm saying?
T.O. was on the same team with Fred X, and Fred X was running his mouth.
Yeah. And if T.O. ran – in that case, if T.O. ran his mouth, I'd be totally fine with it.
Freddie was balling that year.
This won't have any negative impact on the Rams. I mean, the Rams are who they are.
Will it have a positive impact on the Chiefs, on the Patriots? Go ahead.
I don't think it – don't get me wrong. To your point, yes, the New England Patriots utilize anything to, for somehow, some way, some reason, motivate inside their locker room. They don't need any more, but if you throw some fuel on that fire, they will utilize it. And they master how to utilize it, but it won't change. After the first couple snaps, trust me, I'm not thinking about, oh, remember you said this? No, I got to focus on what I need to get done. Now, if I make a couple plays, I might throw it back in your face.
Right.
But when the ball is snapped, and when that whistle was blown and the clock starts ticking down, I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to get him. No, I'm just going to do what I do, and hopefully we win, so then I can come back and be like, got you, boss.
But you're talking about once the game snaps. I'm talking about leading up to the game and the whole week of preparation and the focus and the energy it takes to get to the game. And, Marcellus, I'll say this. I really didn't truly buy this type of bulletin board deal until Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech. And how he talked about he looked for fuel anywhere and used anything, made up a story that he got cut from high school and had bitterness towards that coach. And again, there's something different about the Bradys, the Michael Jordans, and the people that pursue being the greatest of the greats. They're a little off.
You said he made up something, right? And you know what's funny about athletes? It's amazing when you're, like you said, in preparation, I'm going to be fully motivated. In the moment of truth, like you said, Greg, I got to lock in. We all know, like, the jets fly over, whoo, national anthem, whether you're standing or kneeling, whatever happens. All of a sudden, you hear that foot hit the leather, bulletin board material gone, everything. And Michael Jordan said, yeah, I made up a story to even get me motivated. It's amazing that the content of what prepares us has to have a story. So then after the fact, like you said, if you make a few plays, you start to make the story happen. Oh, remember you said this? But guess what? Even if you didn't say that,
right,
in that moment, I still was going to be looking at you like, boy, you can't deal with me.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is I'm going to get to the same place whether you give me a story with it or not. And Tom Brady doesn't need your story.
Why are they on the sidelines talking about it? Why after the game is Tom Brady mocking the people that doubted him? This guy uses this kind of fuel. Y'all keep saying it's going to, once the game snaps, they're going to forget.
What?
When I watch the, dude, they talking about
but
it
But he's been favoring so many games, so many Super Bowls. So what was the story then? It wasn't underdog. It wasn't y'all talking
they
about
come
me.
Up, they come up every year.
Every year.
Every year they had one.
But the point
when they
is,
played the Rams the first time.
Remember, they came out as a whole group team, and oh my God, yeah, this is the greatest.
But that
show
wasn't Tom Brady.
AstroTurf. Again,
what about when they were?
He uses the same food. And when you talk about mundane, this is this dude's ninth Super Bowl.
Yes.
And he has to, because it is mundane to him. This is ninth. He has to
find
use
something.
Little things.
But if you always finding something, then doesn't that mean to you that he doesn't need anything? He will find something within himself and then attach it to what's out there. What you mean? He already has it in him.
But he did give it to him. And it shows you when Roby, the second time he came around and the cameras came in his face, what did he do? He backtracked. Because I think that someone told him when he finally realized, I just took a shot at the GOAT. I just took a shot at the Patriots, and I put my whole team on the. See, this is what happens when you make these comments as a player. It's not just about you anymore. Now what's going to happen is when the camera get put in one of your teammates' face, they're going to ask a question about what Roby said. Hey, man, he said he's going to come out Tom Brady old, and he can't do this anymore. Now you're putting your teammates and everybody else in jeopardy, and then they're going to back you up and ride with you. But at the same time, you jumped out there. You made a comment, and now you got to backtrack on because now you're putting your team in jeopardy.
No, you don't.
Malcolm
Jenkins, Lane Johnson, Alshon Jeffrey last year.
All players.
Exactly.
All
but
players.
You know what?
All players.
They could have played. But they could have played bad and still would have been saying that.
But that's huge. And I think I said this earlier on Undisputed, and you make a great point. It really matters who says it. Because when Jimmy Johnson from the Dallas Cowboys, their head coach, wrote that check, that team cashed it because they felt like this is our head coach. If Aaron Donald came out and said this, if Jared Goff came out, it's a different delivery. It's a different approach from the team now. This is our guy. They're not looking at Kale Roby Coleman as this is one of our leaders on our – I guarantee
you. Okay,
you're
giving me story, give me measurables. So if Kale Roby says something – where's your motivation? Is it going to be less or is it going to be more? Is it going to be the same? Versus if Aaron Donald says it. You're really trying to tell me that a team is going to have a different emotional involvement based on, our leader said go
yep.
get it? You're not already at the max?
Yep.
You're
not
already in the Super Bowl.
You've been in the Super Bowl. It may not. This is the thing. It may not be you. It may not. I may not need that extra motivation. But somebody else on our roster, of course. Aaron Donald speak. Oh, I'm listening. Nikhil Roby speak. I'm not going to listen as much.
In the Super Bowl?
Marcellus.
Against the Patriots?
Marcellus, here's the issue why you can't understand it. You don't believe in 110%.
Nah, it doesn't.
I do.
Okay.
I do. I do think there's another level you can go to. Because I can remember, I thought I worked hard in high school. Then my college coach was like, let me redefine to you what working hard is. And it's like, hell, I didn't even know this existed. And when I left, I still didn't know it existed. That's why I wasn't a great player. I saw others that knew, no, there's another level to this. And when I look at Brady, when I look at Michael Jordan, and then, I'm telling you, when Michael Jordan said it, it made me realize something about myself as a sports writer, something I was extremely obsessed with and passionate about. Man, anybody that ever said a negative thing about me as a sports, I think about and thought about them every day.
Yeah.
And that was my fuel. And I went and looked for it. And this person here don't like me. I could down a whole list of people that said ignorant things about me as a sports writer, and I still remember. And it was my fuel to be a great sports writer. There's a whole different level to this,
but
there
careful,
is 110%.
Be careful how you term that, because what you thought was 100% probably was 88. And you sitting around, walking around, told I'm 100%. And then when somebody challenges you, you go to 90 and think you were 110. Bruh, I'm just telling you, your potential, max
I'll go with your explanation then.
Yeah.
And so Brady
you
has figured out a way to go, damn, I was given 90. Now they're getting 91 out of me, 92, 93. And these other guys, Nikhil Roby Coleman, he's given 73 and thinks he's given 100.
Do we not understand? The simple math is one team's going to win, one team's going to lose, right? So it's not 50-50, but one team is going to smile, one team's going to frown.
Yeah.
You going out there talking, I don't know how many plays talking makes. In moments of truth like this, please explain to me. I've never heard you say something to me. You know what's on the line? Legacy. The fact that you could be a champion. The accolades, the money, the pride. And then a stranger comment from somebody who I'm already trying to destroy is going to get me amped up more?
If it was another team that he came out and said that against, I would say this. A wide receiver, tight end, or somebody will be looking to do something to him personally, right? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go out and, you know, he's standing around a pile too long, I'm going to go do something, hit him later, whatever it's going to be. Because you said this to the Patriots and they do everything so team-oriented, you just put them on a whole nother platform to go out and get ready to play you. That's all I'm saying. They've made a career out of doing this. The only reason why I'm saying is because from what I hear in 2006, I don't know if you remember when they came out and they did it in the playoff game and everybody was doing lights out dance right after the game, the whole team.
Yeah. Yep.
From what I heard, they were talking about that before. It's the reason why the entire team was doing it, not three guys. So what I'm saying is they saw that every time I had a sack or a big hit or a play, that was talked about as a team. So you don't want to do anything to encourage these guys. I'm not saying you go and do anything different. I'm not saying you change or be a different person. But what I'm saying is if you jump out there and you make those kind of comments and you're not the guy who can back it up, you're going to be in trouble.
We don't even have to go that deep. If you were you play basketball or you try to.
It ain't that.
But my point is, if you went to one of these gyms around here locally and somebody just said, oh, Marcellus here? Oh, I'm about to smash on Marcellus. It may shift your entire approach. You may just be going there to just get a good run. Now all of a sudden, I'm going to give him a little bit more.
Yeah, all that's true, but Charles Oakley ain't going to come out of me. I'm going to still be the bum Marcellus while he on the court trying harder.
Let me give you a different example. There's a reason why the Patriots handle their business better than others, and I think it's part of this. Eugene Robinson, he was playing in the Ultimate Super Bowl, but he still went out tricking before the Super Bowl and got in trouble. Mm. And so, again, everybody's focus isn't the same just because it's a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Eugene Robinson thought he was given 100%. Mm. And then they put the cuffs on him. Mm. Whole different story.
Lost it all for that 2% milk. Yeah.
So again, I'm just telling, why give the Patriots, with the Super Bowl's meant this ninth time, why give them anything that just puts them on edge?
Please give me this one. Sloppy. This example, 07, undefeated Patriots. Plaxico Burress went out there and said, we beating them. Went out there and said it.
Plax.
But Plax ain't the
exactly.
team.
Exactly.
And Plax backed it up. How do we know that Nikhil can't back it up? So in this moment.
Because he's Nikhil Roby Smith or Roby Coleman.
My God.
And we never heard of him until he hit the guy late last week or pass interference.
Yeah.
Slot God.
Y'all playing with scared money. I get it. A lot of it's fear-based. Oh, man, don't say something because look how he's going to respond to it. I want your best. I want Tom Brady to go out there and light it up against me if I'm a true believer in me and my team. I'm not going to say,
I want him slipping. I want to make him slip.
I'm not going to sit there in fear and hope my words butters him to a point where he's not his greatness. That's where I'm a little distant from that kind of motivation.
All right, stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our approval ratings for Nikhil Roby Coleman, and Uncle Jimmy will weigh in. All right, Jimmy, what are your thoughts so far?
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Give me stories or give me measurables. The words of Mark Celsius Wiley.
Hey, guys, Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, then you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
Time for a big story. Let's move to the NFL, where the controversial no call at the end of the NFC Championship game is still hanging over the league. After two Saints fans filed a lawsuit against the NFL, the league admitted in court documents that the officials blew the call. And while a lot of people are now calling for more replay, Fox's rules expert Mike Pereira has a different solution, saying the league should add, quote, an eighth official as part of the crew, travels with the crew, and give him the ability to be on site in an enclosed booth with a technician to look at the play on television in real time and correct obvious mistakes that are big plays and involve player safety and pass interference and be able to correct some of this stuff. I completely agree with Mike here. I've said for a long time that I think it should be maybe two or three officials calling the game from above. I would maybe go down to five or six actually on the field and use two or three. I think the view from above, this game moves so fast now that watching the game from above and trying to officiate from above with the help of television is a great way to improve the game.
I like it. I really like it. I'm not in love with it. I think it's a step in the right direction, but it doesn't get us to the proper conclusion. It's still a little half pregnant for me. If you have someone on site watching as an official, that's obviously going to enhance it. Using the technology is going to enhance it. But I have something that I think will really just solve it and just get us to the finish line. We have to use the technology. This is 2019. The NFL is making $25 billion. Let's use the technology. It's funny, I watched tennis, and I was watching Australian Open, I'm sure a lot of us. Their instant replay system not only is effective, but guess what? It's interesting. People are sitting there holding their breath, rooting, is it in, is it out? Oh, and everyone's a part of it. Here's just how you get everyone a part of it, and this is how you solve it. You have a control center back in New York, back at the NFL headquarters. He's watching every game. Just like when we watch multi-channels, he's watching the game, dedicated officials for every game. You use the technology when a flag is thrown, hey, sensor goes off, IFB in the official's ear, let's discuss this right now. While the game is still going on, you talking to him, he already threw the flag, he already knows what it is, you already know, right? We can communicate in those 10 to 20 precious seconds, the viewer, it's seamless to us. And then finally, when you get there, it's a moment of truth. I threw that flag, it's confirmed back in the headquarters, or I picked that flag up. I don't want to disturb the pace of play. We move forward. To me, that's an easy fix. And with the technology and resources, we can make that happen right now.
I like what Mike Pereira is saying. And obviously, if he's saying it at being in that position, he knows what's needed and what's necessary. But I was going to say the same thing. Let's communicate. The quarterbacks can talk to their offensive coordinators from the booth. They get a certain amount of time. Let's communicate with the officials should have an open line of communications at all times.
Yes.
Did we get this call right? If we did, then keep moving on. It eliminates the delay in the game, going to a booth, waiting for somebody to call in and say, okay, we corrected this. No, to your point, that is a great solution to a situation that has to be resolved.
Yeah, I think that's a really good start. But even more importantly, I think that the referees need to be paid year-round. You know, I think that, you know, it's too much on the line because some of these refs during the offseason have other jobs.
Well, they have 24 full-time officials, but I hear you.
But, you know, it needs to be more referees with full-time jobs because these rules – and the game is consistently changing. Hmm. The rule book's growing every year. Something changing. It's special teams here. And it's so many changes that only you have a certain amount of time to make a big judgment call during the game. And if these guys aren't keeping up with times because it's not enough of them to be on the clock year-round because, look, when I'm not getting paid and you only bring me in for a certain situation, that's how much knowledge I'm putting into the game. Yeah. That's how much I know. So I think they need to not only start out with that but also bring – more referees in to work year around. Because when you're not getting paid, you're not involved, and you kind of, even as players, once you're not, you mentally check out from the game, these guys making these judgment calls can't check out from the game at any point in time. It's too much on the line.
Well, this spurred from the fact that you just look at all the instant replay systems that work in various sports. Bill Belichick going on record saying all plays should be reviewable. Now, us knowing the technology that exists and sensors and the communication, and I could be having a two-way conversation with headquarters, with the head official at all times during the moments. There was a moment when we played, and you remember the little RoboCam? Yep. Remember when they first introduced that, and everybody was like, oh, no, this is too much. What is it going to do? It's going to hit the ball, and it's going to affect the huddles. Now, that's commonplace. I think we just need to have some forward thinkers who are saying, this is a simple fix. All plays, like Bill Belichick said, should be reviewable, can be reviewable, and it doesn't have to disturb the time.
I like your idea. I think it's going to require more manpower because sometimes on a play, there's two or three flags. And so you're going to need more than one ref watching a single game and communicating with these guys. And that's why I say maybe five guys on the field, three guys in the booth. I do agree that there needs to be more communication because the refs make a lot – you know, as an offensive line, I see too many holding calls that I completely disagree with. Just because a guy beats you upfield and your arm is to the side and whatever, and I see him calling a hold, I was like, man, that's ridiculous. So I agree. The officials need more help, some communication from above. Greg makes a great point. We're helping the quarterbacks on the field. We're communicating with them. We're communicating with the linebackers. Why aren't we communicating with the referees? And Sean's right. These referees should be full-time, and they should be working practices throughout the week. Practice makes perfect.
And all that added up, it's still going to be some plays.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Really gonna be perfect.
If he gets to the Lakers this year, AD, are they a threat to Golden State?
Hell no. What? Why are we doing this? Okay, AD, you can come here and live and have a greater life outside the game of basketball, and you're more than an athlete. I love all that. But you're not going to be you're not going to be a champion. If you leave that roster with LeBron and you leave it with AD and the remains and ashes of a roster, because everybody else has to go to get AD, who's shooting? This is the team that shoots 28 in the league from three-point. Who's shooting? They 30th in free throw percentage. Like, who's shooting? They can't
even hit it. I got something for that.
Oh, go.
So if you take AD, right, and you ship some out.
Everything.
The shooters. So you still have Caldwell Pope. You still have.
No, then you need to go with that contract.
If they don't, you Hart.
But none of them shoot
possibility. Then you still got people that could be bought out in shooting. Like, shooting can be bought at this point in time at the trade deadline. So Melo's still out there. J.R. Smith could be bought out. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying they'll beat the Warriors. No disrespect. That's a champion. That's a team that's running well right now, and Boogie Cousins doing his thing. No disrespect. But you could find shooting and make a team comparable to give them a scare, but the next year is where you'll be in contention for a championship and really there.
Well, I think the Lakers and Magic have done a good job of showing they found these vet minimums with quality players. I think everyone laughed at the beginning of the summer when they signed JaVale, when they signed Lance, when they signed Beasley, when they signed Rondo. And I looked at it as, like, these are seasoned, proven guys in the right situation they can make work, and they've all played well. I love that Beasley's finally getting a chance to play because he's very talented, but JaVale's played great. Lance has had his flashes playing great. Rondo's Rondo. He's been hurt, but when he's in, he affects the game.
Tyson,
you know what I mean? So they've been able to put bits and pieces together. Normally, when you blow up a team and get everyone, it's hard to find spots. But there's enough veterans out there who aren't playing bought-out trades that can possibly help fill this roster. But like Dante said, next year is where you're going to be able to possibly not get a max player, but another solid, good, all-star-type player. And then it's going
to
be up for dusting.
This year, no threat to Golden
State. It'll be a challenge. They might get a game or two if it ever gets there in the playoffs. But no, I don't even think anyone is going to touch the Warriors this year.
Okay, so I mean, y'all sitting there saying that, and I know it was just one game. But game one of last year's NBA Finals, if not for J.R. Smith, LeBron and those spare parts would have taken game one.
It just would have made the finals one game longer.
Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, but again, if they can get one game with them spare parts, you telling me you add Anthony Davis, who can shoot from anywhere on the court and who can contest?
They've added Boogie as well, and we haven't seen him in the finals.
Boogie compared to AD?
No, you get AD, we get Boogie as champions. It's a little different.
You said best big man in basketball. I think they give him a scare. I think if they're fully healthy, that is the, as you know, winning a championship is about health.
Momentum,
chemistry, playing at the right time. If one of those things goes wrong, then you got a problem. But you got to hope for one of those things to go wrong. You can put together a team that have had championship experience, veterans, hungry, playing for money. That's scary when you got a team going into the finals against guys who are adding to their legacy or adding something to already what they have. Mm.
I know one thing. If this trade don't happen, Luke Walton is getting clipped. That's the only other piece. That's the only other move they can make. If they don't get Anthony Davis, see you, Luke.
I think patience is a virtue, and they're going to be virtuous.
I think, unfortunately, where we're at in today's age, there's no time for patience. And I think, you know, I even touched on the point you made with Brandon Ingram. If you take a step back, Paul George wasn't Paul George his first or second year in the NBA. Victor Oladipo didn't come into his own until his fifth
KD
or sixth year. KD took a minute. It takes a minute.
KD averaged 25 as a rookie.
Now, how many wins they win? How many games they win? No disrespect to his legacy.
I'm just saying it takes time. Some guys are ready to go automatically. Some guys, it takes a few years to develop. And I think, obviously, being in L.A., there's so much, you know, spotlight on Brandon Ingram day-to-day. But I think he is a solid 20-point-a-guy player. Kuzma, to me, is a better player and a higher upside. He's another 20-point player. I love Zoe. He's just been unhealthy. But when he's healthy, his defense, his ball movement, his basketball IQ is unmatched. They have some pieces.
To your point, D'Angelo Russell is turning into an all-star out there on the East.
Shut him on his
all-star.
Yeah.
All-star.
Let's move to Tom Brady, who is gearing up for his ninth Super Bowl and says he has no plans of slowing down, saying in an interview this weekend, there is, quote, zero chance they retire after the big game,
But not everyone is convinced, including one of the guys he's facing Sunday, Rams corner Nickell Roby-Coleman, who says, quote, age is definitely taking a toll for him to still be doing it. That's a great compliment for him, but I think that he's definitely not the same quarterback he was. Movement, speed, velocity, arm strength, he can still sling it, but he's not slinging it as much. Whatever he was doing because of his age and all that, not doing as much of that anymore. Has age taken a toll on Tom Brady? Yes, I agree with that. I think that's proper for me to say. I think Nickell Roby-Coleman has basically just guaranteed age ain't going to take a toll this coming Sunday. Yeah, right. We're going to get some vintage Tom Brady. This is silly. I do think age is taking a toll. Last five games, 8 TDs, 5 interceptions. It's not been vintage, but I just think they're a little gassed up because they didn't take full advantage of the Chiefs, and they're looking like you couldn't take advantage of Bob Sutton playing that two-man coverage. Mm-hmm. Wade Phillip, we're going to put it on you.
Yeah. I disagree with Nickell. I disagree with Jason. I don't think age is taking a toll on him, and I'm looking at it through this lens. Skills is a means to an end. I think we put a lot of hype and a lot of attention on skills when we need to look at what they are. It's a road to production. So maybe he doesn't do it the same way. But he was never defined by skills. He was the 199th player taken because he didn't have great skills. But boy, kid, he played that game of football. So if you get caught up in the lens of looking at him like arm strength or speed or mobility or things of that nature, you get lost in what his greatness really is, which is, I'm just going to get it done, brother. It's with Edelman in and out the lineup. It's with Gronk in and out the lineup. It's with whoever you give me, and I'll make him a household name over the years. This guy is in a place where, as Wade Phillips said, it's impossible to criticize Tom Brady. And if you do, Wade Phillips wants to criticize you for criticizing Tom Brady. I'm in the same place. I don't know what defines this guy. I don't know what he has done to make himself this great. But I'm not going to be the one that sits there and predicts his demise, especially too early. Sounds like Nickell is doing the same.
I'm done saying age is taking a toll on Tom Brady. Nope, it hasn't. And the reason why I say it hasn't is because what we tend to do when guys get a little long in the tooth or at the end of what we foresee to be their career, we start to assess them by their age. Everything that they do, oh man, he's a little older. He dropped that pass. Yeah, he doesn't get the separation he once did. Number one, Tom Brady has made bad throws since he came into the National Football League.
Right.
It's just so prevalent now because now he's 41. Mm. He made that bad throw. I think it's over.
No.
Is he in the Super Bowl? Is he in his third consecutive Super Bowl? And when you look at his numbers, his stats, they don't lie. Like, has there been a drop? If you call this a drop, then I wish I would have had this type of drop. Mm. I'd still be playing. Like, he is perfectly fine. And when you listen to Tom Brady, he's very goal-oriented, purpose-driven. He is perfectly fine where he is.
So you guys think that he's going to be able to live in the National Football League, keep throwing these underneath routes? These crossing patterns, dumping it off to White. You think this a defensive coordinator and the defense won't figure this out 2 years from now that he'll be able to continue to do exactly what he's doing?
2 years from now?
Even next year.
I do.
We're talking about this Sunday.
Yes. Right? Even the last couple of games, we only seen Tom Brady really make a throw where he's standing back there and he throws the ball 30 or 40 yards on the dot. He only did that once or twice the whole entire game. One of the passes, Julian Edelman caught with one hand going across the middle and brought it in. That wasn't a good throw. That was a great catch. So if you think that Tom Brady is, if people going to sit back there and let him keep throwing these 6- and 8-yard and 9-yard passes, and oh, by the way, because you guys finally decided to come up, we're going to throw one deep ball, he's not going to be able to live in the National Football League this way.
Can I get this one?
I mean, please, it's too easy for me.
So what? this is you see this right here?
I see it. Hit a drum again, wicked.
This is accumulated because of a team effort. This is the misconception we all have.
Yeah.
Tom Brady has to beat the Rams. No, Tom Brady needs to just be Tom Brady. And I need Chris Hogan. I need Julian Edelman. I need all these other guys. Sonny Michel, do your part. Mm. You be special too. And that's what's going to propel them. Tom Brady doesn't have to be what he used to be because now they have a running game. And if I'm the Rams, I better stop a running game because I know it's just like Michael Jordan. Everybody who played Jordan is saying, you know what? Let's stop the others because Jordan going to get his. Tom Brady going get his. You better stop everybody else because if Tom Brady gets his and everybody else gets theirs,
Greg,
they're gonna get another
Greg,
one of these.
Listen, and I agree. I think we're gonna see a great Brady performance. I think Nikhil Roby has made a mistake here. Hmm. However, I know what he's talking about. He's sitting there like he's watched the Chiefs game and said, this simple two-man coverage that Bob Sutton played most of the game, they dropped a game-winning interception. Brady should have thrown three last week. Nikhil Roby, he's like, we're not going to make the mistakes that that garbage Chiefs defense made that Tom Brady couldn't even eat up. They got a garbage defense that Tom Brady couldn't eat up. He's Sue, Donald, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, Josh John, Nikhil Roby. They feel like they're going to make them plays. They're a bit overconfident.
He's already making the mistake because if you think that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels are going to come out with the same game plan that you saw watching film against the Chiefs, sorry, buddy, you already been bamboozled.
Oh. Time for my favorite segment. Antisocial, got my Twitter off here. Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here to tell us what's popping on those Twitter
what
streets.
Up, homie? What up,
what's going on, fellas?
What's crack-a-lackin' mackin'?
My
what's
man. Am I all black on today?
Let's go. We about to kill you.
All right, what's popping?
All right, man, we're going to start off talking about the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Whitlock's favorite quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, ruffled some feathers by wearing his Chargers jacket in the rain. Chiefs fans are pretty upset, dropping angry tweets and GIFs after seeing this on TV. I think people are reaching on this one. Mm. Whitlock, you're our resident Kansas City fan. What do you think?
I wouldn't be caught dead in Chargers gear.
Wow. Oh, there you go.
And you sandwiched between us. Let's talk.
I wouldn't be caught dead. But look, if it was raining outside and it's cold in Orlando or whatever, I don't mind him putting on, you know, he just did it because it was raining, man. You're not going to get me to disrespect.
No, he did it because y'all cheap. If y'all were so damn cheap, send some equipment down to Orlando. Hello, y'all need to address? Like every other team was sending stuff. The Chargers send a bunch because we send a bunch of players too as well. That's what we do.
Oh, yeah, shots
that's
fired.
What we do for that. I looked at it as he was throwing shade. Because I remember back in the day where I wore a Raiders hat one time, I was basically saying, I own you, right? I own it. I own a team. I was throwing shade. I think he's quietly throwing shade. Ooh. That's how I looked at it. I didn't think it because of the rain or anything else. I just thought he was throwing shade.
New wrinkle.
I really don't think it's any of that. I think he was getting rained on. Let me get that. Put that on so I can stay
you think
dry.
They missed that big bolt on the left side of the
I don't even think anybody thought about it. This is the one time your jersey, your helmet, it don't even matter.
You're probably saying, you know what, Phillip Rivers ain't good enough to be here.
Wow.
Trying to show y'all a little love. At least one charge.
Hey, Patrick Mahomes on one though, right? He out there cursing on TV, wearing any old jersey.
He's doing himself a little bit.
MVP, baby.
I'm down to death row.
He tripping. It's my lead, huh?
All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, man, let's talk about a story you guys touched on earlier, the controversy in the NFC Championship. More fuel was added to the fire after people found out that the four of the referees from the game were from Southern California. Social media was predictably outraged, calling them cheaters and claiming that this was proof that the matchup was rigged. Again, I think the fans are reaching here. We all know there's plenty of opportunities the Saints had to win, but you guys think this is fishy?
I think it's a total non-story. Because first of all, you got to find four Rams fans out here in L.A., and you can't tell me that the four Rams fans
Chargers and Rams get smoke?
I'm just talking about Rams. I didn't bring the Chargers. Okay. The Chargers would be hard to find two besides you two. the rest being from SoCal, man, big deal.
Big deal, right?
This ain't no part of the conspiracy. I don't even know why Adam Schefter put this story out.
Exactly. I mean, where people live shouldn't have to dictate what their rooting interests are. Here's a fun fact. 8 out of 10 NBA players live in L.A., damn it, all season. 7 out of 10 NFL. 6 out of 10 baseball.
Right.
And
half of them Maki. Everybody want to live in L.A., dog, so you're going to act like you won't have anything in this world, entertainment, sports, anything, if you want to discount or exclude L.A. residents. Come on, man. It's just how it goes.
The Rams just got to L.A. Come on, man. The refs probably been in this league forever. Like, it's a non-story. We're digging. They're digging. They're trying to find something. It's nothing.
What I've seen is, I said, you know how many refs I ran into in San Diego, especially downtown in the Gaslamp, where I spent 75% of my time? I would see him all the time. I would go by and tap him on the back and say, hey, man, you going to call that call? I'm still getting hell right now. You still ain't called it.
Right.
So I would see guys all the time, and they would give me stuff. I mean, it's just, it doesn't matter.
And fans don't get it. Even during the games, refs are cool. You be like, hey, man. Yeah. And you be like, yeah. And then he throw the flag right on you. You be like, hey, dog, I thought we were cool.
Right.
They don't care.
The wording of this story bothered me because as a journalist, I don't even get raised eyebrows around the NFL. If that's your news peg, that an eyebrow raised and therefore that justifies a story, that someone said, isn't that interesting? Yeah. If that's all it takes to get on the front page of a news outlet and to fan the flames and besmirch the integrity of people, that's a really low bar.
I will say one thing, and I heard this. They said, let's not take the referees out of what they've earned, NFC championship game or championship game level. Put them in KC against the Patriots. And in the NFL, let's just be smart, big business. It's not the best optics to have four L.A. residents playing. If they have
it's
an option.
It's not even something they thought about, I guess.
That's the point.
It's not. Uh-huh.
And if you are a big business, you need somebody who's getting paid $27,000 to think about the little things.
Right.
And pay that person to do a moment like
Look,
this.
New Orleans put them first two possessions in the end zone. Are we talking about these refs?
No. Nah.
Thank you.
Nobody would care.
Thank you.
Here y'all go.
Right, yeah, what city is Sean Payton from? All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, our guy Eric Mangini was on First Things First this morning. He's talking about a bounce back game from Todd Gurley in the Super Bowl. Take a listen.
It's easy to be gracious in victory. I think if the Rams had lost, this whole discussion would be different about why would they use CJ instead of Todd Gurley? How can you leave him on the bench? He averaged seven. Now, when you win, everybody's like, oh, yeah,
so
you know.
It worked well.
Every slow clap. To me, you need to give him 15 carries in the Super Bowl and give him a chance to be the player that he's been all season.
Y'all expect Todd Gurley to get a heavy workload on Sunday?
Not because of anything that happened last week. I think I've hopped fully on the Sean McVay bandwagon. I don't think Todd Gurley had a problem with this. Todd Gurley dropped two passes. One of them was an interception. He didn't deserve snaps the last game.
Yeah, he didn't. He does need to get restored and returned back to favor and to where he is of greatness. It's tough, though, because C.J. Anderson, if he goes out there in those first few carries and it just looks – I mean, running back is interesting because you can see the lightning and electricity difference from one to the other. So it could be the same hole, it could be the same play call, but it looks different. And if it looks different again for C.J. Anderson, Gurley might get benched again.
And I think he has to. He has to in order for them to win. I think you can go out and beat the Saints that way, but you won't beat the Patriots that way. So I think he has to get the ball in order for him to come out with a victory in the first place.
I disagree. I don't think he has to. They've won without him. And I think, number one, Todd, you can't – as a player, Todd Gurley looked shook, bruh. Mm. Like, in that game, he looked shook. He looked different. Like,
If your knee wobbling around, I'd be shook too.
I understand. I understand all that. I put that – I need you on the sideline right now because it's working for him.
Look. Yeah. He dropped two passes, and then I think on three pass plays, on two of them, he was hot garbage.
Yeah. Right.
Blue pass,
he said it.
Soft in pass protection. I had no problem with how they used him last week, and if he doesn't play well, he won't play this week. All right, we got a new element for Antisocial.
New element.
Darnell, take it away.
It's Darnell.
My guy.
My question of the day. Yeah, so
man.
Don't hate on your boy.
No.
Okay, yeah.
You're wasting your talents behind that desk. You're on the stage.
You hear that, Whitlock?
No, I didn't. Go ahead.
All right, guys, ever since we started Antisocial, I've had a chance to be in front of the camera. I've been having random people just reaching out to me from high school to middle school, people I haven't spoken with in years, and it gets kind of confusing on who's real and who's fake. So my question for you guys is, how do you decipher between the real and the phony?
I'm going to let y'all pro athletes
handle
that
one. Oh, I got you. All right, my Coach James, L.A. Jets, shout out to him. When I was getting drafted, he told me one thing. He said, if you want to know who's real from fake, listen to people. They'll tell on themselves. Ooh. That was one. Use that to this day, so I'm listening to y'all. Second thing is, learn to say no
without guilt. Everyone learns to say no at a certain point, but you can't wear it with you. Once you say no, move on. You learn to do those two things, you be straight.
Yeah, whatever you say, you got to say it in front of a person's face and behind them. Like, right? I mean, if you're going to talk behind his back, you better say the same thing in front of him. So that's the only way to say real to me.
You know what? I used to hear this all the time. You changed. And I'd be like, you did too. Because when I didn't have this, you never asked me for anything. You changed. Darnell, but you have changed, man. I'm trying to get in your pockets. And you ain't.
I'm trying to get in your pocket. What are you talking about?
That's Darnell.
It's my guy.
Hold on, guys. Y'all dodging a little bit.
What?
How do you discern between who's real and who's fake? Again, you get a little shine. Mm. Y'all went through it as athletes. But hell, y'all were stars in high school and in college. But NFL is the next level. How do you discern between who's real and who's fake?
You know, for me, it's being able to be around somebody needing something and don't ask, right? I mean, it's a bunch of people, they know we got it. True. Know we go and make it into the pros, and they got it, and they're still around. And they might need some rent money. They might need to pay the car note. You know that. And they still don't ask. To me, that's a real person.
I want to follow up on this because that is something I truly believe
in.
I believe the real people in your life, you have so much engagement with them that you know what's going on in their life. And if you're in position to do something to help them when they're in a jam, they won't have to ask because y'all are so connected that you can sense that. And they will know that if there's something Darnell could do, he would have already done it.
Absolutely.
And so it is the people that end up asking you.
Yep.
They're the ones who really aren't in your life because they haven't been letting you in on the whole process along the way.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I had a family, fortunately, that they never asked me for anything. Like mom, dad, siblings, I'm one of four, never asked me for anything. And so when everybody else would come and ask, it's like my direct family is not even asking. So I kind of use that as a barometer to where I was able to fend off others. But to your point, it's great. If you're close enough to people, you're gonna know their situation. You're gonna want to help them out.
Right.
They don't have to ask you. You know what they need, and you genuinely want to help them out. Most of us want to help.
Damn right.
But when you ask me over and over again, you're making me feel I don't want nothing to do with you now.
I want to, Marcellus. You made a great point too about your coach because it's another thing that if you'll be quiet and listen, people will tell you everything about themselves.
Boy,
everything.
Israel.
It's the people that talk too much that you never hear what the other person is saying. That's how you get confused.
Yeah. And my coach got another one, too. He said, are you here for the parade or are you going to be here to help build these floats? It's a big difference. A lot of people want to show up when it's all confetti coming down. You're going to help build this float? My coach was deep.
One last one.
Oh, you got one?
I got one more.
Yeah.
You got one mouth, two ears, and two eyes for a reason. You should do 4 times as much listening and observing as talking. Let's move to Orlando, where the AFC beat the NFC in a bizarre Pro Bowl, a game that might be even more broken than the trophy Jason Witten handed out afterwards. The game featured Zeke Elliott and Saquon Barkley as pass rushers and Mike Evans as a cornerback. And with bad weather and a lot of empty seats, the NFL has already said they might consider finding a new location for the event. Look, man, it's time to move this thing back to Hawaii and back to Honolulu. It was the greatest all-star event in all of sports when it was in Honolulu. Tremendous parties, the game, who cares? The whole week was fabulous. I say move it back to Honolulu somehow. Combine it with the Senior Bowl. Let the kids, the college kids, play, and let the players be some kind of assistant coaches. But as far as the game, it's virtually unwatchable at this point.
It's not virtually unwatchable. It is unwatchable. I'm not going to qualify this. It's done. It's dead. And I've told you guys this before. No football player loves football unconditionally. I've said that 1,000 times. Ray Lewis is close. Like, he might be the only dude I ever met. I'm like, maybe he does.
Sean Taylor did.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a couple. But you know what it is? This is not basketball. This is not baseball. Ain't nobody casually playing no damn football ever in their life. The game of football chooses you. You know, you don't choose it. You choose other sports. And then you're like, damn it. but I'm great at football. Let me do it then.
And this is being proven now because we're watching guys who are trying to play football casually. You can't. They're on the goal line. Guys are backpedaling. You're seeing running backs play D-line. You know why? Because even with a $150,000 incentive and all the speaking engagements and all the companies giving you money throughout the week, we've all been there, it still ain't enough. Maybe to Alvin Kamara and them guys who are on their first contract, but to the energy of the Pro Bowl and those great players, I'm not playing a game of football even once for $150,000. I hate to be that guy, but I'm trying to give y'all the real understandings. This game is done. Yes. Now, if you want to pull this out every week and every year and say this is the Pro Bowl, cool, but your expectations have to drop to what we saw, which was a horrible product.
Yeah, I think that when they go and talk about the rules, what happened in the Rams game and the Saints game, when they go and talk about that, the Pro Bowl needs to be talked about as well and how they want to move forward with that, because I get it, and I do agree they need to move it back to Hawaii. Hawaii and Orlando, just you can't stop. Do that. You can't do that. But I remember going down into my rookie year and getting a chance to be around the players that you play against, but you don't know how they are off the field. And we were sitting by the pool. We were drinking some Mai Tais, and Peyton Manning was down there and having fun, all giggles, and the guys come up. Like, man, dang, you know, Peyton Manning's cool. You would think that Peyton Manning wasn't funny, wasn't laid back, but he's one of the coolest and funniest laid back people down there. Having fun, drinking all week, going to practice, having a good time. But when the game came around, it's still competition. You might play soft or weak a little bit the first quarter. You're getting out there, everybody's having a good time. It pick up a little bit in the second quarter. That first big hit, when that first big hit happens, that game has changed. That game has changed. You get $20,000 for going, you get $40,000, whatever it is, for winning.
Yeah.
And after you fly your whole family down there, and your boys from high school and the boys you played with, you break it even about $20,000. You're trying to go and come up.
Yeah.
That first big hit, you mentioned Sean Taylor's name, because I was right there on the sideline when Sean Taylor came and hit the punter.
Ooh.
When he came and hit Brian, was it Mormon, right? He came and hit him. I was about 10 feet away from him. Everything changed. Now people are out there gunning. So unless they do something or change something about this game, it's not going to be virtually unwatchable. I just think it's not fair to call yourself an all-star, one of the best, and you're out there laughing and playing around and not playing the game hard.
Yeah, the game ain't changing. It's nothing you can do about it. I don't care how much you take it to the competition committee. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Guys are too locked in on one another brands and off the field and all this, let's connect, let's do. They're taking care of one another. Nobody wants to be that guy that's going to take that risk and hit somebody and potentially hurt them or give them an opportunity where they miss out on a contract or more money. It's not happening. This game is busted. You made a great point. You tie it in with the Senior Bowl somehow with some collegiate players and allow them to be around these pros who are the best of the best for this year. I think you get a little something different out of those guys, but they're not playing each other.
Yeah, I would try to elevate the Senior Bowl and get more guys to play in the Senior Bowl. Again, the Senior Bowl's nice. Drew Locke and these guys played in it this year. But if you can get more top round like players playing in the Senior Bowl, take that to Hawaii, let them experience that Hawaii Pro Bowl experience. That'll serve as some motivation for some of your top incoming guys. And I'm just telling you, the parties, it's better than NBA All-Star Weekend.
What do you mean? I've been there. It's an abbreviated version. All-Stars is a higher peak, but this is a better quantity ratio. I give you that.
Yes.
If they put your Mai Tais with Peyton Manning on TV instead of that junk, I'm watching that because I would like to know you in the personal scape. But let's not forget, it's better to watch flag football because at least in flag football, they're violently trying to grab the flag.
Yes.
This is like, I'm going to run up to you and hug you. It's horrible, but I know why it happened. People forget. Robert Edwards went to the Pro Bowl and tore up his knee. And when he tore up his knee playing some sand flag football, every single player felt that message. Said, I don't have to do it, I'm never going to do it. I don't care how much you offer me.
For a big story, let's move to Atlanta, where Roger Goodell held his annual State of the League press conference today. And there was no shortage of questions about the controversial no call at the end of the NFC Championship game. Goodell tried his best to strike a sympathetic tone.
We understand the frustration of the fans. I've talked to Coach Payton, the team, the players. Whenever officiating is part of any kind of discussion post-game, it's never a good outcome for us. We have worked very hard to bring technology in to try to make sure we can do whatever's possible to address those issues. But technology is not going to solve all those issues.
Earlier in the day, Sean Payton addressed the media as well and talked about his struggles to get over the loss. But some observers thought he had an ulterior motive, pointing out that his shirt looked a lot like the notorious Roger Goodell clown shirt that Barstool Sports put out after Deflategate. All right, it's the shirt he's wearing underneath his shirt.
Right.
Barstool Sports is saying that he's wearing a Goodell clown T-shirt. Wow. And if so, I think it's inappropriate. It's why Sean Payton has possibly the biggest ego in sports, certainly in the NFL. And he needs to get over his little tantrum and put it away. I think for Roger Goodell, this was a great day to sit up and just be talking about some on-the-field controversy rather than some really controversial off-the-field controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Great day for Goodell.
Yeah, so the question is he trolling?
Yeah, is he trolling? I'm sorry, yeah.
No, is he? I'm asking you first.
Oh, yeah, I think he's trolling.
He's trolling?
Yeah, he's trolling.
Now, if I answer this, this is the real question. Is our checks going clear? Because this don't seem like this is real deep diving right here. Is you trolling the commissioner? One, it doesn't look like the same color. But two, that hairline peeking through that little zipper right there looks like that picture right there. So I would say yes. I had to go do a weather search. 49 degrees in New Orleans. windbreaker level. But is he trolling? Yeah, but that's who Sean Payton is. I won't even go trolling with him. I will go more of this is how I roll, and you can call that a troll. This is the same coach who curses at players when they're playing. Like, coaches, you know, headset on, hey, what defense we calling? Not Sean Payton. He like, hey, bruh. And he is at the players as they're actively participating. So I think he is trolling for one purpose. It's us against the world. They are doing the emotional roll call that they did after Hurricane Katrina. Different circumstances to get everyone rallied. Sean Payton is doing him because he's trying to get them rolling.
100% he's trolling them. And everybody wants to be politically correct in sports. When 2012, when Roger Goodell suspended Sean Payton, they will never be cool. Sean Payton will never look at Roger Goodell the same way. He might see him in front, oh, how you doing, Commissioner? But deep down inside, he dislikes him. He never will like him. And this is just icing on the cake, cherry on the top. Like, I mean, really, he should have started his interview like that and just said, you know, let me just take this off and tell y'all how I really feel. Because 100%, that's the shirt. And because of that year suspension, he will never, I don't even think he respects Roger Goodell for that, because the majority of teams were doing what the Saints were doing, but you're going to give me a year?
Yes.
You're going to suspend me for a year?
Yes.
He don't respect Roger Goodell.
He suspended him for a full year. Mm. Are you kidding? And you mean I'm not going to wear? He should have took off the sweater and just revealed the shirt, because that is definitely the shirt. But the reason why I don't mind Sean Payton doing this is to your point. This is who Sean Payton is.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even have to really reveal it. Roger Goodell know how Sean Payton feel about him. In the New Orleans Saints, that fan base, they know how they feel and our head coach feel about the commissioner. So I don't even have to. Y'all know what time it is. When have I come to a press conference with my shirt?
He just going to give him a little glimpse. Somebody is going to be smart enough.
This is the world we live in. Somebody picks up on any and everything we do.
Mm-hmm. Probably tipped off. They were probably told
possibly
in advance.
It's a good
that
point.
I'm gonna do this. Probably tipped off. But let me ask this question. And I'll ask you hypothetically to Sean Payton. What did Roger Goodell have to do with that non-call? Did Roger Goodell tell somebody not to call and throw
but
that
the,
flag?
But don't do that to the snowball, because the snowball starts with a snowflake. But it starts to accumulate. And what has accumulated is since Bountygate, which every team was guilty of. Now you have something else that you can attach to
it. What was Goodell supposed to do? Throw the flag himself?
What he wants from Goodell is what everyone wants, which they're not getting. A little more transparency, which I don't think that Goodell should step in. I don't think Goodell should go there.
Al Riveron told him we blew the call.
Yeah, but he wants transparency to action. He doesn't want, and it's too soon to even expect that. But Goodell usually uses his Super Bowl press conference to start new rule change. He's done it before when he's like, hey, I want you guys to go out there and have personal fouls. If you get two of them, automatic ejection. He did that in the Super Bowl, and then they changed it 2 weeks later.
I think Sean Payton was expecting a little more from Goodell.
I tell you a reason why. Because it, can Al Riveron just make the decision and make the nod and say the rules are going to be changed? Who has the final say?
How is calling the guy a clown going to get Roger Goodell to move your direction?
The point is, I'm going directly to the one who could change this. Yep. Who has impacted our team, our organization,
they got a competition committee that Sean Payton's on that's going to decide this. Not Roger Goodell.
But Roger Goodell always uses this moment during the Super Bowl to start new conversation and change.
Listen, man, the call was missed.
Yeah.
Like, Roger Goodell comes out and says, hey, New Orleans Saints fan, Sean Payton, Gail Benson, we're sorry the call was missed. What does that do? Yeah. It's over. I mean, it's nothing he can do or say. You're still going to feel the same way. Sean Payton still is not going to have any type of like in his heart toward Roger Goodell. It's nothing's going to change.
Here's the other issue. And I'm telling you, I halfway like Sean Payton.
Halfway.
He needs some mirrors in his house.
Ooh.
Because that, trust me, there's some guys on his team, some of them 53, they would like to put on Sean Payton clown shirts, run the ball on first down. Run the ball three downs.
I heard Drew Brees did that, not Sean Payton, but let's talk. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, RPOs is a real thing.
That was he said it was a run play.
It was a run play.
Last option.
But he didn't want to throw Drew on the
Shouldn't even give him that option.
Just run the ball. He could have took it out of Drew's hands. Mm. This is what we're doing.
Yeah, but you don't do that.
His ego got in the way, man. He got into a little competition with Sean McVay. That this guy's ego, he's pointing the finger. He needs to be looking in the mirror at what he's doing and what he's done. He's a part of the reason why it wasn't just the call. It's Sean Payton's a part of this too.
You know why he's really mad? He wanted New Orleans to win the Super Bowl this year so he could ride off to the sunset to Dallas. That's what was really, now he's like, damn, I gotta stay another year.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson. Let's move to the NBA, where Anthony Davis was fined $50,000 after his agent Rich Paul said publicly that Davis wants to be traded to a championship contender. Even still, Davis is reportedly expected to put the word out that his preferred destination is the Lakers and that he'd just be a rental anywhere else. The banged-up star didn't play in the Pelicans' win over the Rockets last night and didn't address the media before or after the game. I think this is a situation where, and I don't know Anthony Davis that well, or I don't know him at all, but be careful what you wish for. Not everybody is built for the LeBron James circus, and particularly being LeBron James' understudy. Obviously, Kyrie Irving didn't handle it well. Obviously, you know, Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade went through some struggles in Miami. And so I just think I worry about AD's ability. I look at Kevin Durant and the way he's handled the move to Golden State. He's going to be vilified a bit here, and I wonder if he can handle it.
It's interesting. The first thing you said is, I don't know Anthony Davis. I don't know a lot about Anthony Davis. Me either. And I think that's in part what's really giving this move energy. He wants to come to L.A. He wants to play with LeBron. He wants the big market. He's the third best player in our league, and some say even the best player in the league. And outside of unibrow, what? Like, and he has a weird animal I heard one time. What? Nothing. And that's, I'd rather have some reputation than no reputation, no marketability. And with that level of game, like, you're not taking full advantage of it. So is he built for this? Where I'm from, where I think Anthony Davis is coming from is somebody's looking at him like, get under there and see if you can lift this. And if you can't, LeBron's there to spot you. And it's just that simple. I think this is a smart play for a guy who is not fully materializing and monetizing how great he is.
Well, he's been in New Orleans for 7 years, okay? And he's given this franchise everything he can. Now, despite him being hurt, this is a franchise that would not go over the salary cap to improve their roster. They did not re-sign Boogie. They did not re-sign Rondo, despite what happened last year in the playoff. This is an organization that the president has dual roles, New Orleans Saints and also the Pelicans. So it's a lot of, it's a lot of instability in regards to what they want to do and how they want to build the team. And he's frustrated. Keep in mind, Anthony Davis is only 25 years old, okay? Because he's been injured, he came out later, seems like he's been in the league 10 years, and he hasn't. I believe, truly, it's two things here. If you're Anthony Davis and you're the Lakers, One is the short-term goal of being relevant and winning a championship. You do that in the next 3 years with LeBron there. Post that, it's like, okay, with the Lakers, we need to have a franchise-type player. Post that. So the next 4, 5, 6, 7 years, Anthony Davis, if he chooses to come to the Lakers, the trade happens, he can be our guy. So it's two things you got to look at from the short term, if I'm Anthony Davis in the Lakers, and the long term. And the benefit is this. You learn how to win by playing with a guy like LeBron James. It may stymie you at the beginning, but the long-term effect is I'm going to be here once LeBron is gone. I'm going to take what I've learned and utilize that and build my own legacy if he happens to come to the Lakers.
Anybody remember when Dwight Howard joined Kobe Bryant?
He's not Dwight. Ash. He's not Dwight.
Well, Dwight was Dwight. Coming off surgery
Bro,
as well.
He's not Dwight. Personality-wise, anything. He puts in the work a lot differently than Dwight. His attitude is a lot different than Dwight. So to compare those two,
Well, the Lakers, everybody botched that one, including Dwight.
Okay, but Dwight had led a team to the NBA Finals and nearly a championship.
But his whole demeanor changed.
And
he No, you're right. You did. He did.
Though. Coming off back surgery, playing with Kobe, who's still in the oxygen, who's way more the alpha than you, just was bad.
Oh, and LeBron doesn't steal oxygen. Well, I can barely breathe right now.
I hear he's the greatest teammate. I hear he's the greatest teammate.
Oh, he don't steal oxygen. Ask Kevin Love.
Let me tell you something. If I'm the guy, you want to steal oxygen? I got those two rings. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get my oxygen back with those rings. So the bottom line is, depending on the player, what do you want? Mm. You say you want to win, but now you got an opportunity to win. Well, I can't win the way I want. What you want to do?
Yeah. Yep, and a lot of people are like... A
lot of scrutiny here in Los Angeles. And again, we don't know virtually nothing except he got weird eyebrows. That's all we know.
I will say this, too. And with Rich Paul and what they want to do, too, the timing of it is ironic when regards to next week in the trade.
That's going to play well
in LA. That's going to play well in LA.
You see
he's going to get a lot of eyebrow people that want to come at him like, bro, I got you. You need him trimmed up? Don't even worry about it. But think about the timing of this, too, is that Rich Paul and... What they want to do is take control of the $50,000. That's been fine before, because that's language that's detrimental to an organization, mm-hmm. and that's been done. Steven Jackson had it, Nate Robinson had it, so that is nothing new. Even when the agent comes out and says it,
right?
New question.
New question.
We talked about Anthony Davis. It's my contention that if this happens, AD leaves New Orleans in a huff. There's going to be some more heat on LeBron in terms of more criticism of LeBron. Mm-hmm. Like, he done threw a tantrum. He sat out for a month, forced this trade. I think this is not going to help LeBron's legacy and reputation. For me, if you got to – and if Kyrie comes here with Anthony Davis, let's quit talking about LeBron and Michael Jordan. I don't ever remember Michael Jordan throwing a tantrum and making Kareem, Magic, and Larry Bird all come play with him. I just don't remember that.
Well, you know what's you know what's amazing? You're actually right in your assessment. This is going to hurt LeBron. Because you're splitting hairs between him and MJ. It's going to hurt LeBron. Because MJ's moves were done in the dark. No social media. The GM, the front office, things of that nature was really keeping a lot of things distant from the public. So, you know, you made a great example yesterday in terms of dating, how you can't say exactly what you want to do and what you're going to do. And it's been the many times you've been there when you're about to shoot that shot, you better make sure you don't show the release, you know, because if you shoot the shot too obviously, too overtly, you get what LeBron's dealing with. Everyone sees it coming. Everyone's saying they're calling it a tantrum. When MJ did it, they just saw it as a front office move. But it's the same action, same thing.
I don't see it hurting him. I see in the short term he gets a lot of negativity. What more negative comments or aspects can you have against LeBron James? I mean, he's gotten that. He's scrutinized ever since he got in the league. What happened in Miami was, like, he tried to play the villain. He got scrutinized over that. What more can you have? Now, keep in mind, too, Michael Jordan, as powerful and great as he was, it was Reinsdorf and Krause that decided to break up that team. He didn't have the power that LeBron James has.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's totally different.
Yeah.
You know? So how does it hurt LeBron? It hurts him today's narrative, but 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when the league has changed, more players are taking more control, guess who's going to be the one that spearheaded that? Because the people that are writing that narrative will be a lot different than we are today.
But the facts will be the facts, that in order to win his first championships, he had to go team up with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. In order to win a championship in Cleveland, he had to bring Kevin Love in and benefit from, you know, Kyrie Irving. Now he comes here to L.A., and I got to have AD and maybe Kyrie Irving and, hell, who, Carmelo Anthony and God knows Kevin Durant maybe. I just don't ever remember Mike being about any of that.
Different time. Different era.
I understand it's a different time.
Different era.
But all Michael Jordan's going to get credit for doing the one-year deals at the max level, which really gave LeBron something to stand on to take his player control to another level. So Michael Jordan is tied to this loosely, but he didn't have the power.
Michael Jordan would never, ever, 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 if you brought him back today in his prime, he's not trying to team up with a bunch of other guys. He's trying to break your neck.
You never presented him with that option, you know?
If given that kind of come on, man.
Kareem did it.
Kareem did what?
When he demanded a trade for Milwaukee to go to the Lakers.
Uh-oh.
Who was here? Magic wasn't there.
Magic wasn't there yet.
Because he's older than Magic. Of course he wasn't there. But he wanted to go somewhere else where he can win another championship. He didn't win a championship in Milwaukee. I'm going to say that Oscar Robertson, they needed each other. Kareem felt he needed to go somewhere else to win. So he demanded a trade back then to go to the Lakers. He did. A superstar at that time.
Look, man, we can't go all offensive. Kareem came here for the weed, man. Whitlock and Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
Got my Twitter off. Time to get anti-social. My man Jim Jackson is back. My favorite segment. Darnell Smith, our social media manager. What's poppin'?
What's up, Jimmy? You feeling good, man?
See, there you go. You're about to start.
Get him.
About to start. I got something for you.
All right, man. We're going to get straight into it. We're going to start with y'all guy LeBron, who was spotted on the bench last night having a sip of something. But Twitter thought it was more than just Gatorade. A lot of people assuming that Juan aficionado LeBron snuck some vino into the court during the game. Look, y'all, I mean, we've seen Bron bring Juan into the court before, so to me, it ain't the big of a deal. But what do you think?
Hold on, Jim, you called this game.
When he did that, the first thing I said, there's some vino up in there. Yeah, it's a tab up in there. He's sipping on there something. Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, that water bottle too nice for some Gatorade. Like, it was black and all
probably
nice.
Temperature control, keep it at about 65 degrees.
Yeah, look at that water bottle. That ain't team issue right there. Nah, that's some of that. Oh, you got that $2 Chuck up in that thing, too? Y'all like $2 Chuck?
No.
Old school, bro.
Charles.
Come on, man. We elevated ourselves since then.
I'm not going to comment more. You ain't elevated. You paying more.
I'm not going to comment on this.
Why not?
I'm going to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, man.
Go ahead. You just said Kareem on the weed.
You just said that
Kareem on the weed.
What's the difference?
He on the bench with the players, man. Take it to the stands.
Oh, no. We used to eat hot dogs when we weren't in the games.
You drink wine?
Alcohol, but not wine.
Hey, you got some clear liquid in there.
Yeah, if I'm hurt, we used to always spike our Pedialyte with a little thing, you know, a little vodka Pedialyte. Yeah, you feel energy. You got some energy.
Darnell, what's next?
All right, man.
Sticking with King James, rumors that LeBron and Kyrie Irving may team up in Los Angeles next year keep popping online. A lot of different reactions from NBA Twitter. We've got confused Celtics fans. We got angry Cavs fans. And turned up Lakers fans with their boy Jack Nicholson. Y'all think there's any chance that these two reunite in LA?
I think this is all a smokescreen. I think it's a head game they're playing with Anthony Davis. Why go to Boston? Kyrie wants to come here and play with LeBron. I think it's a smokescreen.
Oh, that's interesting.
I can't, man.
You can't?
I just can't imagine this. No, I just can't with this right now. The back and forth, the flip. I don't know what Kyrie gonna do, bro. I mean, he said he's gonna stay in Boston, but he said he plans on or something like that when they asked him the question about staying in Boston. He said he plans on staying or something like that. And it was never definitive. Like, yes, I'm saying I don't want to leave. I want this. But I came with this right.
America loves a great comeback story and a greater redemption story. Apologizing in public. When he apologized in public, I was like, that's for a reason. Because he could have just easily dialed that up, kept that on a low. He did that for a reason. Let's test the temperature. Oh, y'all want to see this. Now I'm going to give you what you want. I think this is real talk.
Dude, I think he would really put a clown suit on himself if he does
that. Why? LeBron only got 3 more years.
Dude, but you went to all that trouble, demanded a trade, left, went to Boston, which brand is just as big as the Lakers.
Right.
They got all that talent, and because you can't work it out with their young players, you going to run off to L.A. too?
But how much is this, too, of because of the success they had last year, Kyrie coming back in, the question keeps going, is Boston better without Kyrie? So you know his numbers then spiked up since a lot of that stuff, too, since he said that, averaging over about 30 points a game and taking over.
I'm 26 years young, and when I was out last year with injury, y'all let this noise get to a deafening level, talking about y'all better without me. And y'all didn't win a championship. If you're going to say that, y'all got to go win it. Oh, y'all didn't? Now I'm going to show you who got the power. He's showing it in his numbers, and he's going to show it in his control.
Listen.
We're convincing you, huh?
This, no.
Admit it.
It's a clever smokescreen by Rich Paul and LeBron. They're playing a head game with Anthony Davis.
But why is Kyrie a part of that?
He's not a part of it.
He didn't want to apologize in public. You wouldn't give Rich Paul that ammo.
That was before.
You wouldn't give Rich Paul that ammo. We get you somewhere. We did you.
Man, Kyrie ain't going
nowhere. That was taking a shot at his young teammates. Anyway, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, man, on Monday's episode of Fair Game, this clip of Christine Leahy and former running back Clayton Portis has been buzzing online. Take a listen.
Is it true that in Washington you would take a little sip of Hennessy before the games?
Yeah, but that's true. Like, I don't understand. If you're going out, right? If you're going out to have a good time, you pregame. So after I took that shot, it was like, okay, now it's time to go do this. Instead of going to lay down and take a Toradol shot, which all of a sudden comes out and it's hazardous to your health, it's dangerous for you and all of this, like, I skipped that curve.
All right, y'all. Y'all buying this excuse for Portis pregaming?
Well, I'm actually wondering what was he thinking in the interview? What was he sipping on?
Wasn't there no ice in there, too?
What was he sipping on during this interview? Look, did you see the way Clinton Portis used to dress up before games?
Yes.
This don't shock me.
Right in character, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, look, I had teammates. Never before a game did I saw this, but certainly nights before. And I had one teammate, big workouts. He took a fifth of Hen and some blacks and beat everybody in the workout. So some guys just, that's their fuel. And he's right. He has a great point, even though we're going to laugh at it. Hey, man, y'all got drugs in one side. Yep. I wanted the alcohol, but I got the desired effect.
He wanted that Hen dog, baby. He wanted. I played with a guy that would drink and have beers before the game.
Oh, yeah.
Now, part of it was what he couldn't help it. He had an issue with that, but it never stopped him. He can get a double-double within 13, 14 minutes, and it never bothered him.
Right.
So I'm not surprised that somebody does that. I'm sure. I know some guys who,
I mean,
what's the difference?
Yeah, and we do call it pregaming for a reason.
What?
Every time you got to go out.
Hold on. I had a guy, a teammate at halftime would go and take a cigarette, blow it up in the vent so nobody can smell. Like, dog, you know we can smell it on your body, right? Just because you blew it in the vent, that don't mean that we can't smell it.
Now y'all gonna force me. We had a wide receiver on our college team. His name was Herb, and we called him Herb because he couldn't play unless he was on
Herb.
Couldn't play
loud
at all.
Where's Herb? Herb?
I ain't gonna say his last name.
D.
Herb's Bobby Watson.
All right. Oh, good.
This is the last time you were here, we've added something new. Darnell's question of the day. Take it over, Darnell.
Let's see.
It's Darnell's. My question of the day. My question.
Question
of the day.
285 pounds. You like that, don't you, Jimmy?
Look at that.
You like that a little bit.
You like that, Jimmy?
What's the question, Darnell?
All right, man. So yesterday, you guys were talking about player mobility and Anthony Davis, and it made me think of a question of, or the point of, why do you the old generation always hate on us millennials, right? You know, you guys say we're lazy, we don't work hard. You know, and to me, I think we just found a more efficient way of getting things done. So what are your thoughts on millennials?
I'm going to tell you my real thoughts.
Why are you lying?
You ain't got to giggle.
I'm going to keep it tight.
You better be.
My thoughts on millennials is that my generation and above has let y'all down. We didn't instill you with the values that were instilled in us. And so my disappointment is with us, not with you all as much. I think y'all feel like y'all have got things figured out. There's not the level of respect from the younger generation towards the older generation That disappoints me, but I blame that on us more than y'all.
I love millennials. I love Gen Z. King Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, so every generation thinks theirs is greater. Mm-hmm. They have found a more efficient model. They are smarter, not working as hard. They respect what needs to be respected. We used to respect stuff, and then when we found the dirty details, we were forced to be silent about that and still had to respect. I like these kids. They're like, you got to earn this, brother. And if you don't, oh, well. I am respecting this generation. I look forward to all their greatness.
I agree with you on this, because when we came in, coming in the NBA in the 90s, the guys looked at us differently. Even when I was growing up, when hip-hop first hit, it was like, man, what kind of music is this? What is it? Mm. You're always going to get that. And what I do love about millennials is this. Prove it to me. Don't just tell me this is
Thank
the truth.
You. Thank
I need to actually see why I have to do this.
Yeah, we question everything.
You know, you question everything. Now, why? Some things you why? Don't need to question, okay?
Right. Why?
When I tell you something, you listen to
See, that's what we grew up on. Hey, mama, why? Because I said
don't,
so.
Don't why? Say why.
But it don't make sense.
It makes sense to take out the trash. It makes sense to keep the room clean. And you say, why? No, that's what, but I do agree with you from this perspective that as an older generation at times, we failed them in regards to communicating the actual reasons why we want you to do things instead of saying, just
what,
do it.
What generation you grew up in where your family was explaining all the
It wasn't about explaining, it was about earning the trust. And again, I think there's a lack of respect from them towards us because we didn't do enough work to earn their trust. That's my generalization
Good question,
about the millennials.
Yeah, great question.
All right, thank you, Darnell. It's time for Dat Dudes Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Oh, the best three Dat Dudes Dudes of the year.
Yeah.
What? I'm talking about the big uglies in the trenches. Jason Whitlock style. Let's go with number three. Rams defensive end Aaron Donald, the Donald. Week 13, that dude of the week. Rams beat the Lions 30-16. You can see Donald right now bust through the double team and strips Matthew Stafford. Oh, my God. Dude, 20.5 sacks this year. We know who he is. Donald's lined up over the guard. He knows he's probably going to get double teamed by the center. But Lions center Graham Glasgow decides to give a punch to Ndamukong Suh. Ooh. And he sees that gap right there. You know, they on sale right now, them jeans. So Aaron Donald decides, let me go close this gap right now. And look at the pin down of the arms. And then the head position. Amazing you could get so many sacks by just proper head position. If his head was not upfield, he would not be in this position to get it. Now you can see him going through the gap, fighting, double team, hold, doesn't matter. And now he gets to Matthew Stafford, punches that ball out like a grizzly bear. Hunting for the fish. Got to get him, baby. Aaron Donald, 20.5 sacks. We know who you are. You're our number three Dat Dude of the Week. Now, the year. See, I told you I was going to forget. Number two, Texas defensive end, J.J. Watt, and he's here to sack.
You went big name.
Watt Sharp, because this dude did amazing things. Week 14, he was our Dat Dude of the Week. Ended up with 16 sacks this year, 7 forced fumbles. Look at this get off. And get off 22 positions in the one night stand. Look at that get off. That's how you get off the rock. J.J. Watt realizes, you want to step down and go low? Come on, Braden Smith, you can do better than that. You're already on signal to J.J. Watt. I'm going to cross that and hit you with my old college swim move. Oh, the swim move has to clear. As you can see right now, it's not just about twisting your body and getting skinny in the gap, but you must clear the helmet. We've seen some bad cases of this. J.J. Watt, the technician, now knows that that gap is quickly closing, so he has to get through there. He has to get through there tight like Indiana Jones in the movie. Get the rope. All right. Got skinny in there. Got through that gap. Once again, hand position. Man, defense alignment out there. You got to know the little things matter. And now he locks that arm off. All these subtleties are happening. And now he finds Andrew Luck, and he's a great white shark in the water looking for his kill. Why you got to be white? Great white shark in the water looking for the kill. Andrew Luck, take that. J.J. Watt, number two. Dat Dude of the Year. But now, my favorite play of the year from any of these dudes in the trenches. Number one is the Ravens offside linebacker, Matt Judon. Triple sack, y'all. Oh, week 12, Dat Dude of the Week. This man had 3 sacks and 5 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. You can see him dominating Brandon Parker and running out the stadium. How's this all happen? First team Brandon Parker's thinking on the last 2 plays, this is what happened. This dude has already beaten me for sacks. Oh, I got to be careful who I'm going against. So he's already worried and thinking about it. And look at Judon. Ooh, that right arm.
He is setting him up, making it seem like I'm going inside and look at a heavy punch. But look at it. Uh-oh. Look at the body position. A little different from that. So now you put the foot down in the ground, hard anchor step. Remember that right arm for the setup? It's going to be a claw. Grab him. Yank him. Oh, man. Watch Parker right now in this moment. This is Whitlock Ball State style.
It is.
My man getting tossed all around. Hey. Hands on the ground.
I've been there.
Bobblehead style. Judon got to walk it off. Three sacks in the game. Hey, my man, Matt Judon, you are the dat dude of the year. Amazing.
I like Joel Smingy versus me in about 1988.
Smingy, I'm good.
All right, thank you, Marcellus. Great job.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Greg Jennings is back, and joining us now is TJ Husmanzada. Time for a big story. Let's move to Atlanta, where the Rams will make their first Super Bowl appearance in 17 years on Sunday. After Sean McVay engineered a remarkable turnaround last season, Los Angeles decided to go all in on this year, shelling out big money for stars like Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley, as well as bringing in several big-name players through trades and free agency, including key pieces like Brandon Cooks, Ndamukong Suh, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, and Dante Fowler. All right, will this be the wave of the future? I think no, because I think Stan Kroenke and this Los Angeles market is one of the few markets that can shell out all that upfront cash that it took to bring all those players in. I don't think the Clark Hunts of the world and a bunch of other teams, only they want to shell out all that upfront cash.
Yeah, I don't think that it will be the wave. I think it's smart money spent and spent wisely, and it to this point has worked. Think about what the Rams did. They looked at a losing proposition, which is a quest for an NFL championship. Of all of us sitting up here, only one of us has a ring, and it's Greg over there. 97% of all NFL teams every single year know that they're going home frowning. Only one team wins, only one team gets the crown, 31 L's. And they decided in a losing proposition to get themselves the best hand. And it's weird to me that the psychology around, do you want a super team? And most people say, no, is crazy because you want the best hand. If you're going to Vegas and they're like, the odds are against you, you're like, well, give me a bad hand too. No, I want the best hand even in a losing proposition. What's amazing about what the Rams did is they actually hid the most important element of having some kind of chemistry and continuity. Their offensive line. All five offensive linemen started all 16 games together. And we get lost in the sauce and talking about, oh, this new addition. But they kept continuity where they needed it most. I wish more teams would think like this and bring in a super team and stack the deck.
Yeah, I don't think that this will be a trend that we see in the National Football League, although teams may want to do it. But you bring up a good point. I want to add to that. They're in a market where they needed to make a splash. They were fighting just getting fans to games. So what easier way to attract fans than to, number one, win, but to have players that are intriguing to watch every single Sunday. And then you have a structure in place, in-house, with a young coach who's relatable, translation to players is right on their level. And then you bring in a Wade Phillips who's older, who's experienced, but we see what he did with Aqib Talib down at the Super Bowl. That's who he is. Players love him. He has the wisdom, the smarts, the know-how. They did everything that they needed to do to be able to be successful and to handle personalities. Every team isn't built like that, and every team can't follow that model.
The thing is which teams feel they're two or three pieces away next year? The Rams felt going into this season, if we can add a couple guys, this could put us over the hump.
Seattle,
number next one, year. They have the money to do it if they want to do it. They can afford to give up that upfront money. But if you look at the Rams' moves, Ndamukong Suh, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, defensively, they're worse this year than they were last year. So did it really help them? It helped them in name recognition, but did it really help them on the field? Last year, they were 12th in points allowed. This year, they're 20th. That's a huge drop-off. So teams that feel we're two or three players away, whether it's offensively or defensively, I think it's a smart gamble. But everybody has to realize they're one-year deals. Aqib Talib, he might not be back next year. And Ndamukong Suh, he might not be back next year. Marcus Peters, I'm sure they'll pick up his option because he's young, but they're not long-term deals.
It's 1 year. Let's see if we can strike real quick, and then we can move on if we don't like it.
Well, you get yourself some equity. You get yourself some runway when you get that championship. You worry about those problems when you get there.
Yes.
So many franchises are sitting there in NFL just wanting that one championship, let alone worrying about trying to go to consecutive and go back-to-back. So I look at the Rams. It was a smart play. You got to make a splash in L.A. They actually landed and made a splash. And then the record with Jeff Fisher in his first year, when you go 4-12, that'll do it. The Coliseum was packed game one preseason. 90,000 people there. Yeah, they're playing the Cowboys. But everybody in L.A. was like, we don't know if you guys are good or not. Actually, from St. Louis, you weren't. You're 7-9 or 8-8 every single year. But L.A. was ready. And then they did this. And I think what has really helped is the fact that this team put in, like, Voltron pieces. And they had a core. Like you said, they were close. But then they wet the bed against Atlanta in the first playoff game last year. This is a team that was close, said, let's keep our O-line intact. Let's just add a couple of pieces to give us some dog. What they lost was some dog in the fight last year that they gained from those negative decisions.